Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cross Pollination with Matt Harrington, a 30-minute podcast focusing on young leadership and the skills needed for tomorrow's workforce. Cross Pollination works to connect ideas, concepts, and strategies from various thought leaders and share those insights with the world. Now, here's your host, Matt Harrington.
Good morning, everybody. This is Matt Harrington, and thank you for joining us on another Cross Pollination. It is the 15th of May, so we try to do a podcast every 15th of the month, bringing you new insights specifically around millennials, kind of their place in the world, and where we can provide some insight or some furthering topic that prepares them for the next generation. It doesn't always have to all be about millennials, but that happens to be our focus, as we think that that is the key to the workforce moving forward, as there are about 90 million millennials out there, and they make up about 50% of the workforce. Today, I want to talk about millennials and money and millennials and wealth in particular. Some interesting statistics came out recently about millennials and wealth. Get a load of this. 29% is a portion of millennials who said in a nationwide survey that they had sought professional financial advice, only 29%. The survey by a Nashville-based financial planning firm called iQuantify found that almost three-quarters of millennials have financial goals, but only 20% have a plan to back up those goals. Additionally, the survey went on to say 60% was the portion of millennials in the survey who said savings was a major goal, but more than half said their biggest challenges included not making enough money. 64% was the portion of millennials who said saving for retirement was their top savings goal. That was followed by vacation, buying a car, paying down credit card debt, and saving to buy a house. And one of the most interesting things, and why we're going to talk about wealth today, is 7 out of 10 young people think financial stability is being able to pay all their bills in a month. And I have a special guest with me today, a dear friend. We've been friends for many years, and I asked him to come on the show to talk a little bit about money, millennials, and wealth. But we know that financial stability is so much more than just being able to pay your Verizon bill every month. And so I want to invite JJ, also James Williams here. He is the CEO and CIO of Williams Financial, and he's going to join us on the Pollination Show today. JJ is an investment manager and wealth advisor. He earned his MBA from the University of UMass, and he earned his bachelor degree in business administration from Southern Vermont College right here in Bennington, Vermont. JJ has been a financial service professional for over 15 years. He started his career as a bank manager at one of the main offices here at a local bank. In 2003, he left banking to manage an independent broker-dealer overseeing operations, finance, and compliance, as well as counseling his clients. And I have actually used JJ in the past, full disclosure there. In 2005, he opened Williams Financial Management, which is an independent, fee-only, registered investment advisory firm that works with individuals, families, and businesses throughout the company, or out the country. So I want to wish you a happy Friday morning, and welcome to the show, JJ.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So talk to me a little bit. I've given you a little bit, our audience, a little bit of the overview of kind of your roadmap or your path through money, wealth, and kind of your financial background. But give us kind of a snapshot biography of your past.
Sure. This all started back when I was probably 17 or 18. My grandfather is what they call a Vanguard guy, meaning that he started with Vanguard probably 50-some-odd years ago. He's been using Vanguard low-cost mutual funds his entire life and investing in individual securities, but not a lot, like maybe 4 or 5 at a time. He was a tremendous investor. He just passed away, actually.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But he was probably one of the best investors I've ever got the privilege to know. Anyways, when I was 17 and working at Hannaford bagging groceries, he gave me a book by Jack Bogle, who's the guy who started Vanguard. And that was my journey into a hobby. Well, it was a hobby at that point. And I started investing myself. And I would talk with him, and we'd kind of go back and forth. Anyways, the personal story behind what you just mentioned is that while I was at the bank, I was responsible for deposits, marketing the deposits, and marketing for loans. But we brought in a broker-dealer, someone who does the investments, and it became my job to actually market that department or division as well. And anyways, we brought in a broker or a registered rep from Boston who worked for us, and I was in his office kind of all the time. And he said to me, you know, JJ, you're in here so much, maybe you should think about doing this. And he said, but don't, no offense to anybody, but he said, don't do it at a bank. You know, it's more complicated when you do it at other places and you see it a lot more people. And so I sought out, I was being sought out by an independent broker-dealer in the area and jumped on that. And what I realized when I was there is that the commission-based business that this industry has been for years and years and years is really something that is changing. people want to know that the advisor that they're sitting in a room with, that their goals and the way that they're compensated is aligned with what you're actually delivering. And if somebody is being compensated through commission, it's not impossible, but it is much harder. excuse me. When I decided to start my own business in 2005, I decided right from the get-go that we would do a fee-only registered investment advisory firm, which has really taken off in the country now. But still, in this area, there are very few who are fee-only. And when I say this area, we have branches from Albany, New York to Boston, Mass. And there are people that travel, you know, 2.5 hours to come see us because in the financial news, they're being told to go see a fee-only financial advisor. And so that's what we did.
Great, great. Well, a couple of different thoughts that I want to touch upon today. One is I was reading some articles kind of prepping for the podcast today. And I want to get your take. One, I think it's a very interesting thing of what you're talking about with kind of getting rid of the commission base, but also the idea that I think in general, in layman's terms, millennials want a friend when they advise.
Yeah.
And in actuality, that's why I've come to you quite often, because you and I kind of hit it off, and I was looking for somebody that said, look, at brass tacks or here's the basic thing, you know, I'm not gonna give you a bunch of folders and you're not going to pay me on commission and all that kind of stuff, but it is more based on kind of the friendship. And I think millennials are looking for that, as they are with any credit card or any anything like that. One of the biggest things we know about millennials is they may do a bunch of their research on Google, or they may go find out a lot of information, but more than not, when it's time to finally pull the trigger on the house, the car, where you're going to invest your money, they want to talk to a person. I thought that was always an interesting thing, because we think of millennials as being completely tech-based and they're going to make all their transactions and all their key life decisions by clicking a button on a computer, and that's not the case.
Absolutely.
It's more about them gathering as much information as they can and then talking to a trusted advisor. One of the statistics that did come out was that only 29% of young workers have looked for professionals for advice, whereas 71% of those millennials asked their family members about financial advice, and 45% turned to friends.
Yeah.
So where do you kind of see the evolution of maybe your business or your industry in kind of accommodating that kind of new generation of, wow, they really – They're going to family and friends who probably don't have all the right answers, and they should be coming to us. How do you build that in?
So let me back up just for a second and give a little bit of history on this, and I think why it's moving this way. You know, back generations ago, there was that whole buyers beware kind of, you know, situation that was happening, and our society decided that really isn't an appropriate strategy in the market. And that's where government kind of stepped in and they helped a little bit. And they said, no, you can't, you know, I tell my students all the time, you can't sell a lawnmower that's going to kill somebody now without having some consequences. Back then, you used to be able to do that. The same thing I think is happening through investments and through the wealth world. And what I mean by that is, you know, my grandfather, take him for example. When he sat down with somebody 50 years ago, he could pretty much, you know, it wasn't necessarily a buyer's beware market. He knew that person was there and they were really trying to help them. Obviously, they were trying to make a living themselves. But it's become so complicated and so convoluted that people really don't know who they're sitting down with anymore. One of the things I tell, you know, millennials and others all the time is that a financial advisor actually means nothing. It's like saying mechanic, right?
Yeah.
It's not a designation. It's not you need to know how you're actually paying this person. So to get back to your question, our regulators have come out and they've really strongly said, look, these clients need to understand whether they're working with a fiduciary or not. And what that means is a fiduciary is somebody who is obligated from a legal standpoint to work in your best interest. Okay?
And kind of like a lawyer. Like if you were to hire a lawyer, that they're at your best interest.
That's exactly right. Well, believe it or not, most registered, what they call registered reps or stockbrokers, they're not fiduciaries. They're not required to work in your best interest. As a matter of fact, they're required to work in their company's best interest. And this became really, really evident and kind of helped people like myself out during that 2008 crisis. Mm-hmm. And when Goldman Sachs had to go in front of Congress, and they had explained to them that they could definitely sell something that was going down in their own books while selling it to their own clients. And, you know, the congressional committee said, how is that possible? And the person said, because I'm not a fiduciary. So this is why the fee-only investment advisors are really springing up more and more.
Because they get paid for helping you out.
They get paid in two different ways. They get paid hourly, which I'm going to get into more with the millennials and why they like that. And they also get paid as a percentage of assets.
Okay.
But to get back to your original question, because I really want to hit this one home, I think millennials, and frankly not just millennials, but others are now really looking for three things. They're looking for an advisor that can come alongside them, who can restore order, because things are so complicated right now, and there's so many choices. And this concept of globalization has just really taken off, that people don't know where to turn, and they don't have time because of the pace of life right now to go through all those choices. The second thing that they're looking for is financial peace. And what I mean by that is they don't want to have to worry about this stuff, right? Your generation, I'm not sure where I fall. I think I'm in an extra millennial, but that our generation is what we call it's a more complicated generation where we're looking for meaningful things, not just a career, not just like lots of money. We're looking to experience life as much as we can and get as much as we can out of it. And in order for that to happen, someone has to help us or them with financial peace to kind of take care of that part. And the last and I think most important aspect is a safe harbor.
Okay.
People want to know that when they're stepping inside the building or inside the office of the individual that they're working with, that person is a place that they can seek advice that's unbiased and they're not going to be sold things, right? And that's really, I think, what millennials most importantly are looking for.
And having worked with many millennials, I think you're spot on. I think millennials, since 9/11, since the wars, then the Great Recession, I think they are, if we were to look at kind of Maslow's hierarchy of need, that need scale, they are in a perpetual safety and security.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are not reaching even aspirational height. They are right there in a little bit of belonging because they're social creatures or we're social creatures, but also a lot of that safety and security. And so what you see is, I think that's even an angle you could play on with the finance. And I've talked to a bunch of my friends who I think are smart, and I've done some financial planning, and they have as well. I think a lot of them see that as a safety and security move. Like how do I not get kind of bummed over like my parents did in the recession, but at the same time, I want to be smarter than the average bear, and so I do know that I do find it interesting that kind of statistic where they're 7 out of 10 think that just paying the bills is financial stability, whereas I've talked to a bunch of my friends, and maybe I hang out with a different group, but they're very forward-thinking in saying, I want to prep for a house and prep for retirement and do that early. I talked to my mother's a great example, who literally there was no such thing as a 401k when she started work.
Yeah.
And so she started at 40, and I started at 22. So she goes, just think of the kind of the extra or the kind of the the multiplicity effect of your 20, you starting at 22
yeah.
versus me, it wasn't even a thing
yeah.
until we got to the 40s or our 50s.
Yeah.
And so I think there's great potential in us. One thing I want to ask, and let's bring it back down to kind of simpler terms.
Mm-hmm.
Millennials get money. Millennials get a paycheck every 2 weeks, every month. What are 3 to 4 things that you say, this is how you break out? I know you're going to go into that a little bit about your model of saying, you know, part of that is budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
But talk to me, you know, we get our money.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best thing we could do with it? As opposed to stuffing it under the couch because we saw all our dads and moms'
yeah.
401ks blow up.
Yeah. Let me, again, take a step back and just explain to you a little bit where I come from when it comes to millennials and what I see. And then I'll give you those 3
mm-hmm.
to 4 things. I talk quite a bit about the different generations and their behaviors of what I call financial stability. Our grandparents or even great-grandparents went through the Depression, and they know what it's like to need something. So most of that generation, I would say, you know, people who are 75 and older, or maybe even 70 and older, are very good savers. And because of that, many of them have a good foundation and good stability. And even if they don't have a great foundation of wealth, their spending habits are in check. They understand what they need to do. The baby boomers, which are like our parents, that was the generation of if it felt good, do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter what the consequence of that was. And so many of us have grown up in homes where the financial stability wasn't necessarily there. And I think what that's done to Gen X's and millennials is it sent us back to be more like our grandparents,
mm-hmm.
where we've said, okay, you know what? I need some stability. And like you said, 9/11 and the world's not necessarily safe anymore. It sent us back to what I talk to my clients all the time about is safety and independence, right? That's, you want to have the safety of having good, solid financial foundation, and you want to have the independence to make decisions that you want to make. And that means if you want to take 6 months off in the middle of your career or a year off in the middle of your career to go on a sabbatical and go live in Africa or whatever you want to do, that's a very millennial kind of thing to do. You want to go live in Paris and see what that's like. Having the independence to actually go and do that is more of that generation's focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you talk to that generation, right, and this is what I tell the group that works with me. If you talk to that generation about spreadsheets and about charts and pie graphs, it doesn't matter to them, right? It just goes right over their head.
More experiential. Here's
yeah.
what we're building for. Here's the general 40,000-foot view.
Exactly. Like, tell me how I can live the life I want to live while still doing all the things that I'm, quote-unquote, supposed to be doing. That's really what it's about. So with that said, you get a paycheck and you say, what do you do with your money? I'm going to back up and say, even before you get a paycheck, one of the things that we talk to our clients about a lot, and especially millennials, is that when it comes to personal finance, one of the most important choices you can make is your career. There is almost no other one thing that directs your immediate level of wealth than the career choice, career path you pick. It's incredibly important. And your generation has kind of found that, hey, if I don't just stay with one job and wait for somebody to give me a check, right, or a raise, if I kind of bounce my way to promotions, that's a great way to wealth. And that is true nowadays. So I would say career is number one. The second is, and everybody hates to hear this, and I get that, but there are basically 4 quadrants that we talk about when it comes to wealth management or wealth wealth advice. The first and most important quadrant for us is cash flow management or budgeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I am actually not a big believer in budgeting. I'm a big believer in what David Bach, the author of The Automatic Millionaire, talks about is creating an automated plan for almost everything else besides your budget, and then just whatever's left over, that's your budget for those discretionary things. Most people can deal with that. Very, very few people can spend X amount on food, X amount on this. It just doesn't work. So I'll talk about David Bach and his Automatic Millionaire kind of plan in a second, but I would say have some idea of a budget. And I don't mean – I always tell my clients, like, the most important things are not how often you eat out or what you spend at the grocery store. The most important things are, are you in the right housing percentage? You know, are you spending the right there? Do you have the right insurance products? Are you saving at a rate that's acceptable? All the other stuff doesn't matter, because if you've got like those three or four or five really important things down, then how much you spend at the restaurant or at the bar or whatever doesn't really matter as much, okay? So then two other pieces of advice I would tell you. For the number of clients that I see that come through here, there are two things that you can do to build your wealth quickly and almost without knowing it. And the first is understand what your actual cash flow needs are. And what I mean is understand what you actually have to earn to pay your fixed expenses, you know, what your house, your phone, all those things that really can't change, and then what you want to make on top of that for your what's called discretionary spending, which is going out, clothing, all those kind of things. Then once you get that base, okay, don't change it as you're getting raises or promotions. You take that, say it's, I'm just going to come up with, say, $45,000 or $50,000 as an example.
Yep.
Okay. If you're making $50,000 and somebody offers you a $5,000 raise or a promotion or a different job that gives you, you know, $55,000 or $60,000, some of the most successful people that come across here, and they're not high-level executives who are being paid a lot, you know, they're business owners, they're public school teachers, they're private, professors and stuff like that. What they've done is they've just maintained a lifestyle that's constant, and as their income has gone up, they've banked that income. And so that's one. And the second one, which I think is the most important, I do personally have done for many years, and I try to convert everybody I can to it, is to automate everything. And what I mean by that, and millennials especially love that, you automate all your bill paying, you automate all your savings, you automate all everything that you possibly can.
So you're not looking at it.
You're not looking.
You don't have the opportunity to take from it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important aspect. If you do that, wealth will build quickly.
Great. If you're just joining me, we're wrapping up the show in a couple minutes, but I have J.J. Williams here with Williams Financial. If you want to learn more about J.J. and his great group here, go to williamsfinancial.net.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Great. Well, we have room for about one or two more questions. One of the things that I want to – you mentioned it a couple times. You've done some work with students. You're kind of in the millennial – microcosm too.
Sure.
You were chair of the entrepreneurship department over at Hudson Valley Community. Do you think we're in kind of a renewed age of entrepreneurship or entrepreneurialism? What is that all about? Are millennials part of that? I just wrote a blog last week about risk aversion generation, which is this generation too. And so we actually looked at some statistics that say that entrepreneurship, as exciting as Facebook and Snapchat are, is actually down across the board over 50% from when it was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that, remember, 90% of all of the business in America is really based on small business,
mm-hmm.
not kind of big corporations. So that, to me, is the entrepreneurship kind of belief in America.
Mm-hmm.
But that's down 50% based on this generation, mainly because lack of money in finance, inability to get great credit because of the debt they took on from school, student loans and stuff, but also I think we're a risk adverse. We don't like to risk too much. We've witnessed too much 9/11 recession.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we know how to jump in feet first. What's
yeah.
your thoughts around that?
I agree with that. I actually do see growth in that area happening. And I see it in two different areas. But I'll back up and just talk to you for a second about why that is. I think business has kind of gotten a stigma to it, that it is not necessarily a clean and great thing to get into. And I think that's too bad, because there are a lot of really great business people out there. And like any other industry, if you get a couple of bad apples, it kind of spoils it for everyone. But I think business is a skill that unfortunately is not taught at an earlier age, just like personal finance is not taught at an earlier age. And we would really, as a society, do well for ourselves if we started teaching some of that. So that when you got into college, right, and you're sitting in a classroom and this idea comes to you, or your friend has an idea and they want your help with it, it's not foreign to you to think that you can go down and it takes 5 minutes to register with the Secretary of State and you're in business. And you really have to know more of that. But here's what I see. There may be fewer people starting businesses. However, there are also fewer people failing out of those businesses than ever before.
Okay.
And that's for two reasons. I think, at least in my research shows it for two reasons. One, boomers are starting businesses like they've never started them before. They have more money, they have more experience, and they kind of get to a point in their lives where they say, you know what, there's got to be more to this corporate job that I hate. Now, I want to go and start my business. How do I do that? And at that point, they have enough experience and enough smarts to go seek professional advice.
Okay.
The second is the millennials. They're starting businesses, but they're not just starting them with a snap of a finger. What they're really doing is they're getting all the information. There's more information on the web and at your feet or at your hands than there's ever been ever. And they go and they get all that information, and then they have a better chance of success. Plus, they understand the value of friendships and what we call advisory boards, and so they're not afraid to go and seek out advice.
And I think kind of within that also, they, maybe not all, and I'm lumping them into it, but they get kind of the full breadth of everything from design to the networking that you're talking about to whatever. The one gap I do find in a lot of millennials is strategic thinking and the ability to see downfield. And so that's always something that I push on them of not just the tactical stuff, not just how many hot dogs you have to sell in a month, but what's your mission, what's your purpose, what's the year plan, the three-year plan.
Yeah. But you can also get somebody to help you with that.
Yes, and I think and I wish that was more prevalent. Just as a small business owner myself, and JJ, you and I have talked quite often about small business, you wish that, it really is, if there was a step-by-step, and I think that that's probably what a millennial is looking for, like, give me a folder that says, first step, register your name.
Yeah.
Second, get this. Well, I appreciate you having on cross-pollination. I think it's a lot of great information, a lot of stuff that we need to take away. Hopefully, anybody listening to this, whether you be a millennial or you be of any generation, that you take one or two nuggets that JJ has talked about. I know I've written a bunch down here. Just what's one or two things today on this Friday that you can't start to think about and then have questions? And, of course, if you have questions, you need to go see JJ over at Williams Financial, and that's williamsfinancial.net, so any questions you have there. I do want to wrap up with one of our favorite questions that we try and ask every host or every guest, rather. Any newest apps that you've downloaded in the last 3 months that you're liking, or any new tech that you're using? Maybe something even around finances. I don't know.
I'll tell you too. They're not the newest and greatest thing, but I think that they can really be life changing for somebody. Mint.com, which is part of Quicken. If you don't know that one, you should get that. That's one of the millennials' favorites. And then some of the brokerage or custodians that we use, like whether it's a Fidelity, a Schwab, a Vanguard, whatever that is, they have some apps, and yes, they'll show you your account, and yes, they show you transactions and all those kinds of things. But what a lot of people don't get into is that there is a vast amount of wealth behind that. And all you have to do is click on news and research, and there's all kinds of they really do a phenomenal job giving a lot of information, like we're just talking about right now, in layman's terms about how do I do these things.
Great. Well, again, JJ, thank you so much for being on Cross-Pollination. If you want more information from JJ, just go over to his website, williamsfinancial.net. And again, thank you for joining us this 15th of May.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right.